This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Don Sola. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Sola on AM 790 WPRV.
And we would like to welcome you to the Money Talk program. Getting close to the end of another week, starting out the month here of March. So the first quarter will be over before we know it. Stocks did close higher today, I'm glad to say. I mean, it's been a really volatile period. It's amazing to watch the markets go, you know, swing triple digits, you know, 100 points this way, 100 points that way. But do that several times during the course of the trading day. It's pretty wild. And, of course, right now the market is moving, as one analyst I was listening to earlier today suggested. He says it's moving based upon the fear of what we don't know, you know, what we can't expect, what we can't depend on. The market's like dependability. You know, you almost have to start thinking of the market and the exchanges that make up the stock market as like it's a person. And I say that because it really does have a personality. It seems to react to emotions, both good and bad, exciting and negative. But stocks did close higher today. The president implemented his steel and aluminum import tariffs, which had caused a lot of the good and bad market activity over the last several trading days. And I guess the good news in this one was to subtly show that it was not going to be overly restrictive, meaning that they were, at least for the time being, excluding Canada and Mexico from the tariffs, at least at this for this point. My guess would be, given that the UN, United States and its trade representatives representing the president are engaged in ongoing discussions about revising some of the key elements to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. The president has always complained about it not being fair to the United States, but it also showed because the one thing this president has pretty much illustrated was that he doesn't understand a concept that diplomats and economic policymakers in Washington need to understand, and that's the concept of linkage. Linkage meaning that diplomatic policy, economic policy, trade policy, they're all interlinked in one way or another. We have relationships with people, and we, in some cases, will either tolerate or even offer as a, a carrot in the carrot and stick concept, offer as a carrot a favorable trade arrangement, which may be more favorable to another country, but in return, we enjoy special relationships on the exchange of security information, intelligence, military support. When we're dealing with international partners, there's a great many. And so these sometimes the economics of a relationship, along with the security arrangements of a relationship, as well as the diplomatic tug of war with these other countries in those relationships are linked. They're linked together. A lot of times when you listen to the White House discuss potential policy, you get this scary feeling that they don't either understand or even recognize the issue of linkage. Well, unfortunately, when they finally discover it, it becomes a very painful reality. But anyway, Canada and Mexico are two key trading partners, maybe two of the most important trading partners to the U.S., and especially in this issue of steel and aluminum. We import more steel and aluminum from Canada than any other trading partner, and our relationship with Mexico on those same products is right. I think they're number four or five. So worldwide, it's a big issue. I think the president during the campaigns originally, when talking about these things, wasn't really talking about these very, very close trading partners as part of this, but was talking primarily about China. And there are a lot of inequities and unfair things in our relationship with China. But this president has, in his first year as president, has also kind of, in some cases, looked the other way in an effort to get the president of China, Xi, to be, you know, a partner in his effort to put specific controls or restrictive elements on North Korea, knowing that China has a far greater influence on North Korea than pretty much any other country. Now, the S&P 500 today was up about 0.45%, closing at 2738. utilities and consumer staples were the best performing area. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 93.85, almost triple digits, 24,895. So we're only about, who knows, about 105 points or so away from getting back above 25,000 again. NASDAQ was up 0.4% at 74.27. Major averages, alternated between gains and losses throughout the session. I mentioned that earlier on. That's pretty much what we've been seeing for weeks now. Now, the main focus, and by the way, it's not based on our fear or knowledge of something specific. It's based on our fear or knowledge of what we don't know, of what we can't depend on, of things that just simply distractions that we're forced to deal with on an ongoing basis. And pretty much all of it's coming out of Washington at this point. Markets do not like insecurity. They don't like lack of dependability. And that's what they're seeing and feeling. The main focus is, of course, on this issue of the tariffs, according to Peter Cardillo. He's with First Standard Financial. He's their chief market economist. The question for the market is, what do these tariffs mean in terms of their economic impact here in the United States? Not so much, it's not about the tin, it's not about aluminum, it's not about steel. It's about the way the rest of the world reacts to this first shot across the trade bow. And the tariffs signed by Trump today will take effect in about 15 days, according to them. And they're going to, as I mentioned, which is part of why the market's in favorable close today, they are exempting Canada and Mexico at this point. The word is indefinitely, so we don't know what that means. I mean, it means, I guess, if the president will probably want to use this as leverage in the NAFTA talks. He's going to probably want to get more from Mexico and Canada in the NAFTA deals because he's willing to exclude Canada and Mexico from the tariffs. Again, to me, it sounds a little bit like blackmail. I'm not sure it's much appreciated by people who are such critical partners of ours. They also leave the door open for some other countries to argue, in other words, to make an appeal as to why they should be exempted as well. The moves slap a 10% and 25% charge on aluminum and steel imports, respectively. A strong steel and aluminum industry is pretty much vital, according to the president, to our national security. You don't have steel, you don't have a country, according to him. Yeah, but he's looking at an industry that has been, much like the coal industry, has been in decline for many, many, many years now. There are other ways in a global marketplace. And I think the president is it's like a tug of war. He and certain advisors within his administration, and as well as the people that have the president's ear, are trying to convince the president that we have to have a strong manufacturing base dealing with steel, aluminum, and other certain key products that are out there. And, of course, using the national security argument is one that goes well, I guess, with his base. Yet, interestingly enough, our own advisors, the president's own key people in the military, for example, and in the national security wing of our government, are not in agreement with the president. They've tried to make the argument with him that actually, damaging potentially the diplomatic as well as economic relationships we have with a number of our trading partners out there from Europe and Asia, Japan, elsewhere, as well as Canada and Mexico. If you go in and you treat them badly, you treat them not like they're not allies, but instead you treat them like they're competitors. Now, we may live in a world where there is competition between these countries, and you can't ignore that. And there has to be some level of reasonableness. If you're giving another country a trade break where they look to have a little bit of an advantage, you must be getting something in return. I'm not sure this White House is looking at what our nation gets in return from all of these trading partners for the beneficial deals they get on trade. Shares of U.S. Steel and Nucor fell 2.9% and 2.7% respectively, while Century Aluminum was back 7.5%. Boeing, a large metals user, of course, saw its shares climb about 0.5%. Interesting to see. We'll be watching the markets and not just how the market goes up and down, but what areas of the markets are affected by this. But more importantly is how does this piggyback or roller coaster or even snowball into bigger trade problems and tariffs when the other countries start applying their trade tariffs as well. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. I'm going to take a break, and I'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
With the Bloomberg Business of Sports Report, I'm Michael Barr. The stadium won't open for another 2 years, but the NFL's Rams and Chargers are set to show you your seats. The Los Angeles teams will begin selling season ticket memberships for the new stadium at Hollywood Park next week. The more than 70,000-seat arena will host the Super Bowl, college football playoff title game, and Olympic events in its first decade. British odds makers have been enjoying good fortunes in recent months. Bettors' favorites are falling through. However, shareholders with Paddy Power Betfair are still on a losing streak. Only 2 months after installing a new chief executive, it now has to find a chief financial officer. Analysts have also cut their estimates after word Paddy Power will have to spend more on marketing, causing shares to fall. And that is a Bloomberg Business of Sports report. I'm Michael Barr, brought to you by Grainger. No matter the job, Grainger's got your back. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you run a growing business, you wear a lot of hats. The I ordered it hat, the Mr. Fix-It hat, the it's taken care of because I handled it yesterday hat. My favorite hat? My I received an order from Grainger hat. I look my best in that one. Grainger's got the products I need and gets me them when I need them, no matter what hat I'm wearing that day. You know what? I love Grainger. You know why? Because Grainger's got my back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
There's absolutely nothing traditional about my small business. And when it comes to technology, I need someone who understands my unique needs. That's where my Dell Small Business Technology Advisor comes in. With one phone call, he sets me up with tailored products and services. And when my advisor is focused on my tech, I can focus on my small business.
Get end-to-end solutions with the help of a Dell Advisor, including PCs featuring Intel Core processors. Call an advisor today at 877-BY-DELL.
People make your business work, but how do you find the right talent? ZipRecruiter. One click, post your job to over 100 top job boards. Then, smart matching technology instantly alerts quality candidates about your job. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
To try ZipRecruiter for free, just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
You work hard to recruit the best talent for your business, so you know today's candidates want perks they can enjoy every day. Give them the healthy, active office culture they're looking for with Veridesk Standing Desk Solutions. The new Veridesk ProDesk 60 Electric is a commercial-grade electric standing desk that lets you sit or stand with the touch of a button, and it assembles in under 5 minutes. To learn more about the ProDesk 60 Electric, visit Veridesk.com/radio. That's varidesk.com/radio.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you to our next segment of tonight's Money Talk program here on AM 790, your home of talk and business. And as usual, we do take your calls during the program. Maya's here. She's our producer. 437-5000. That is the local number. That is 437-5000. And we have a toll-free number at 888-345-0790. If you're driving and it's not a safe time for us to chat, we'll just give Maya your question quickly, and she'll plug it into my screen and make sure that I address your question, hopefully before you reach your destination. If you are in a safe place to chat and it's an important question that may need a follow-up, let her know that, and we'll be happy to get you on as quickly as we can. We do respect your time. We appreciate your listening to the program. Yeah, I mentioned so far today we've been talking about those things that have been moving markets up and down. And at the centerpiece of all of this, as I mentioned in the first segment, it has been discussions of policy, economic policy, trade policy coming out of the White House. And the numerous different types of excuses or explanations as to why some of these policy changes are being floated out there. But, you know, the president said last week that he wanted to implement a 25% tariff on steel imports and a 10% tariff on aluminum imports. And he did that without exempting anyone, no countries at all, including Canada or Mexico. Those things popped up immediately. Anybody who knows anything about our trade relationships, especially those with you know, countries that border the United States and have critical relationships. It's an interesting dynamic by saying that there are no exceptions. That's when people start getting nervous in terms of, well, what does that really mean? Now, as is often true with this particular president, he could simply have been using those suggestions because, as a matter of fact, he didn't let anybody in his own administration know that he was going to do this. He was in the middle of a different meeting where he had had a week where he was getting beaten up a lot on a number of different issues. He was a little bit upset with things happening in the White House, dealing with the chaos that seems to be a part of the daily the news feed out of that big building in Washington. So he decided he wanted to pick a fight, and I guess this was one that he thought that he had something he could control, something he didn't need a lot of cooperation from others on. Now, granted, he had talked about the issue of trade during his campaigns, both for the Republican nomination as well as in the general election. So, it's a fair argument to say that this is not a topic that is a major surprise that he just pulled out of the clouds. This is something he's been talking about for a very long time, but never in the past, even in his earliest days, and we're talking about going back decades as a businessman in New York City. He's always been one of those areas of argument with him, talking about what his feelings that the U.S. doesn't get as good set of deals and making deals with many of our foreign trading partners. And there have been occasions when he's criticized existing administrations in Washington, and there have been times when his arguments were reasonably valid in some cases. But there are others who say that fundamentally he shows a lack of understanding of how a great many of these trade deals are actually done and what the international and interplacement relationships are between these countries, and that those relationships are not as simple as do this, do that, give me a better deal, and walk away. The president wants to win. That's the big theme in his campaigns. His personal campaigns, his political campaigns are all about winning. The problem that he has is that I don't know, honestly, and I've heard this as a complaint from people who know the president well, is that he doesn't understand well the concept that you can actually have a negotiation, and ultimately the best negotiation is when both parties win. There's something called the Hong Kong trade principle. Now, maybe this does go back, admittedly, back before Hong Kong was given back by the British back to China. So it was considered one of the pinnacles, one of the capital of trade in entrepreneurship and economic deal making was Hong Kong. And among the things that were critical in the Hong Kong deal was that two individuals who were part of a transaction could execute that deal, that contract, with a handshake. Now, maybe it sounds like the Hong Kong business community is a small community. The idea being, if you back out on your handshake, everyone's going to know it, and you will never be a part of another deal going forward after that. So if you want to stay as part of the community of business leaders, you make sure you honor your deals. The other thing, too, is the issue of honoring the concept of holding and saving, not only saving, but maintaining face, the term face, F-A-C-E. Don't ever cut a deal with someone where you deliberately cause your, competitor to lose face. Remember, each individual in a deal comes forward with a constituency. They're representing other people. They're representing sometimes large corporations or organizations of one sort or another. And they want to be able to go back to their constituents and say, here's what we got in this negotiation. The skill, thoughtfulness, and honestly, the effectiveness of a decision maker or a deal maker is dependent on their ability to make a deal that gets them what they need. You may not get everything that you wanted, but you get what you need. Each party to the deal knows that. I want the person I'm dealing with to be able to go back to their constituents and say, we got as much as we could, but it was enough to allow us to accomplish our primary goals. We didn't get everything we wanted because we had to give up some things too. The second party has to be thinking the same way about the alternative party. In other words, both deal makers go back to their constituents and say, we got what we needed in this deal. No one's embarrassed in the deal. Politicians in the United States the last ones I think we honestly had that could do business that way, political business, was probably Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill. That's the last political relationship that I've heard of. People on the different sides, a conservative Republican, Ronald Reagan, and a liberal, progressive Democrat leader, Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House. They maybe dealt with the fact that on a fundamental personal level, they liked each other very much. There was a very strong personal relationship. And they spent a lot of time communicating with them. They often had dinner together. And they talked things through, and it was really like a Hong Kong-style negotiation where the president would say, here's what we need, here's what we're looking for. His staff had prepared him with his little cards in bullet points, and he says, this is what... And Tip O'Neill would say, Mr. President, I can't get you that, but here's what I can get you. And because they both understood that each side needed some element of the win, but you don't have to beat the other person to win on your efforts. I'm not sure Donald Trump believes that. I mean, I saw his biography, a multi-hour biography, years ago before the elections even occurred. And it was pretty clear from the time he was a child, raised in his father Fred Trump's household, that if you don't win, and sometimes that means beating down your competitor. He says a winner is a killer. That was the phrase that he got. He was a killer. And if you don't win, you're a loser. That's the other thing. If you don't get everything you want and more, you are a loser. And unfortunately, his father taught him that. So, I mean, we know who to blame. His history is like that. But the president this time around, so he's carrying a lot. You see a lot of that now. This goes back to his teenage years. And now here we're seeing it, you know, and he's in his 70s as the president of the United States. He's carried that attitude that Fred Trump, the father, instilled in him. But as we said, here's a case where he's probably positioning this whole, I think a lot of this issue with the tariffs on steel and aluminum have a lot to do with wanting to walk away as the winner, I mean outright winner, in beating down Canada and Mexico as part of this NAFTA negotiation. There are reasons why the elements of NAFTA exist. There are reasons why they were written and negotiated the way they were. They were not perfect. Most negotiations will not be perfect when you're dealing with global economies. This is sophisticated stuff, and it's not for the faint of heart. And it's not simply about deal-making. It's certainly not about beating down your competitor. But anyway, the announcement sparked fear that a trade war would take place in the near future. These were the first shots across the bow. The move also was followed by, and this is a key element, which showed people whether the question, should we be worried about this or not? Well, one answer that said, well, maybe you should be, was the resignation of the president's chief economic advisor, a man who was considered to be the grown-up in the room when the president's sitting there talking about the economy and trade and economics. Gary Cohn. Cohn opposed the implementation of tariffs. He told him so. And quite frankly, got to the simply point where he says, okay, now he's listening to Navarro and Ross, two people that are completely on the opposite side of any of these things. They're what we call nationalists, as opposed to people who support and understand the concept of global trade. And, of course, Cohn would be considered to be the globalist to some degree. Well, we're a globalist world now, and a lot of this right-wing, white supremacy-type mindset that seems to be purveying and constantly flowing through, and you see it periodically in Washington and certainly in the White House, it's becoming problematic, and all of a sudden, a lot of the chaos you see in the White House is because not everyone really fully understands the nature of this administration. So anyway, Cohn's departure sent ripples through the financial markets because Gary Cohn was there that most of the big economic and financial decision makers on Wall Street and global markets around the world were feeling relatively comfortable because they said he's got someone who was very influential and helpful in getting the tax bill through. Not a perfect tax bill, but something the president hangs his hat on and believes it was a great success. I was very surprised that he didn't allow Cohn to be more influential on a critically important decision, the one that deals with these issues of globalization and tariff relationships with our key trading partners. The back and forth you're seeing in the markets right now is investors really trying to figure out and determine whether the tariffs will go through or not and who will be affected. Many people are looking at the tariffs through a lens of what happened in the 1930s when we implemented tariffs. That was the last time it was meaningful. But the backdrop is much more different now than it was back then. Back then, we ended up with the depression of that period of the late 20s and 30s. Folks, I'm Don Sowa. I'm not trying to scare you. We're going to give you a little bit greater explanation going into the second half of the show as to why these things are important and how they do affect the markets. This is Money Talk. I'll be right back.
Why do we call it small business? Why not agile business? Nimble business? Dance circles around the big bulky behemoths business. Uma Office, the small business phone solution, has a virtual receptionist to direct calls to the right extension and a mobile app to help you answer while away from the office. About all that's small really is the price, starting at only $19.95 a month. Visit uma.com, that's OOMA, or call 866-649-9377 to find out more. Uma, the phone your small business deserves.
Hear that? That's the sound of safety and the sound of your family's belongings staying where they belong. In times like these, it's important to know how to protect your home, your family, and your valuables. A good strong lock on a solid door and frame can make a huge difference. Most burglars will spend no longer than a minute trying to break in. That's only as long as this radio announcement. Remember to lock your doors and windows. Even the best locks can't protect you unless you use them. Install bright outdoor lighting. If you have an alarm system, use it. And post signs that say your home has an alarm. Trim bushes and trees so your house is clearly visible to your neighbors and your street. If you ever return home to find that someone has broken in, do not enter. Call the police immediately. To learn more on how to keep your home and family safe, visit ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. Let's all work together to keep our homes safe and sound. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
The National Guard for me was a perfect fit. I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I didn't find that in the normal day-to-day life. I didn't find that working behind a desk. I realized being hands-on and being a soldier was something that would keep me active, keep me outside, keep me in that team environment that I created than that I needed so much. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake. I wanted to be in Boise, Idaho. I wanted to be home. The National Guard gave me the opportunity to stay right where I was, serve my country and my community, and it was the best of both worlds. I grew up flying bush planes in Alaska with my dad. I was fortunate enough to get my pilot's license. I wanted to be in helicopters. I wanted to be a crew chief. The Army National Guard gave me a chance to fly helicopters now instead of fixed-wing aircraft.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
Is your dog gone again? Moriarty's Fence can help. Their design, installation, and pet training services are customized to your home, your pet, and your budget for your pet's outdoor safety and indoor avoidance solutions. Call 800-225-0808 for a free site visit, pet evaluation, and estimate. Or schedule online at moriartysfence.com. Discover why more pet owners and pet professionals choose Moriarty's Fence, your invisible fence brand. And pet solutions experts, Moriarty's Fence, keeping pets safe since 1986, guaranteed.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program. You know, I get a lot of questions from other elements of the media, TV sometimes, and certainly you come into the Salty Brine Broadcast Center here on the Wampanoag Trail, and you've got multiple radio stations and the ongoing on-air commentators and everyone here. So everybody's got questions and opinions, and they're commentators too. And they basically wanted to say, well, you know, with all the talk we've been hearing and the markets jumping around with all this stuff about trade policy and, you know, going on. I said, is there really, I mean, is aside from speculation, and yes, the market does move on speculation. Somebody said it buys on speculation and sells on the reality. But the ultimate thing is let's dig down below the layers of the onion and say, is there a real danger to the U.S. economy in the president's trade policy right now? Or I'm not really sure there is a trade policy. That's the whole issue. I think that there's a little bit of, well, they're transitioning. The president actually on financial, purely financial issues, that he didn't get the an accomplishment on the health care side, which is the first thing they launched last year. And there was no real commitment other than, you know, conversation that hopefully represents future effort on infrastructure. But he got through the tax bill, and that was a very important element to his administrative agenda. But the one thing that he had in common was that the president, even though he personally doesn't know a great deal about economics and especially the political side of things there, he had a lot of support from the leadership in the House and the Senate. There were people in the Republican Party, elements of leadership on the legislative side, who are willing to sit down with the president. They, he surrounded himself with great with good people like Gary Cohn and others. We watched a lot of vacillating of that, and it created a lot of anxiety as some key advisors, you know, would come and go. But ultimately, Cohn was the key person there. And coming out of the first year of a presidency, despite all of the things, that happened under executive order, not all of which were ultimately history will decide were particularly good things for the government and for the economy. But, you know, the tax bill is having or potentially having a positive effect on the economy and the markets. History and, of course, time will show which elements of the economy, whether it's the middle class, the lower middle class, or the upper class, the wealthy, you know, who really ultimately are the beneficiaries of this. I suspect who may be myself, but history and the debate will go on, and time will tell. But like I said, with the resignation of the chief, the National Economic Council director for the president, his key economic advisor, Cohn, that really did make the people nervous. His departure came in the wake of losing the policy argument over sweeping new taxes on imported steel and aluminum. So Cohn tried to make the argument. He tried to counsel the president on this. And I think that I think his ego may have been bruised sizably as well. By being that his voice should be the most important voice on economic policy in the White House, but the president allowed outside what you'd call extreme elements, who really on the nationalist side, which is not a healthy thing for the greatest entrepreneurial economy, the greatest democracy in the world. It has us moving in a dark direction ultimately, but Cohn trying to keep the sunlight in. And failing to do that, I think that he saw that as a major failure. This is Cohn himself. But his resignation did come as a surprise, though, to a great many people. And it's a reminder that the real risk that the Trump initiative isn't the tariffs themselves. That's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is what's going to come next. I don't think the president or any of the other advisors, including Wilbur Ross and Navarro, really have any clue as to what really is going to come next. That's not their area of expertise. Cohn certainly has a pretty good sense of what that will be. I think that he was upset that the president wouldn't listen. Trump's now going to find himself in the middle of a multifaceted international dispute with varied diplomatic and economic repercussions. Again, I mentioned in the first segment, without an understanding of political linkage to economic decisions, as well as diplomatic decisions, as well as military decisions, there's linkage between all of them. And sometimes the president's decisions will seem a little bit one-dimensional, as if he's looking only at one thing and focusing on that. And since on trade policy, he has decided for once to actually govern the country rather than to outsource the work to congressional Republicans, which he did very successfully on the tax bill, he's going to need to make some very difficult choices. And he'll be doing that. He'll be making those choices without a strong base of personal knowledge in the areas of trade, global trade especially. And the impact on diplomatic relationships that we have around the world is certainly not an area of expertise of the president either. The question will be, as a result, when you don't have a Gary Cohn there, do the relevant questions actually get asked? And with a White House team that appears to be sort of disintegrating before our eyes, I don't really know, what the answer is to that question. One very plausible outcome of this chaos is that the administration will simply be paralyzed and unable to actually do much of anything. That may be as much of a risk as anything else. When people ask me, what's the risk to our economy of some of these decisions the president is making. I'm saying it's not based solely on the decision. It's not based solely on steel and aluminum. It's not based solely on Canada or Mexico. There's far greater, far more likely long-term effects to a lot of these decisions, and they're not being thought through. Given the particulars of this situation, that would probably be a good outcome. I mean, ultimately, if not a lot got done, sometimes too much gets done, and that's problematic. But it's also possible that things will slip entirely out of control with some severe negative consequences for not only the United States, but for a global economy. And people are asking, well, does this cause the next great recession? Well, it could. Remember something, too, folks, from a perspective of investing, and which is hopefully where I try to bring the focus of the Money Talk program back around to that. You need to understand how politics and how local decision-making does affect the big picture. But remember, the stock market is it's a vast group of people voting with their money based on how they feel as much as what they think. And that's why it's volatile. It's people making decisions about how they feel about money and decisions. And it's money and decisions about the future. And it's seldom driven by greed. It's sometimes driven by fear. But in the end, it's all driven by our view of ourselves and what our futures can be like. What's happening in Washington is highly complex. Quite frankly, the president of the United States was voted in to that job because he didn't have, strangely enough, he plugged his lack of political experience. Now, granted, the positive in that was supposed to be that he wasn't connected to the political society, to that whole political environment that will drive some of the things that are negatives in Washington, D.C. It's not a perfect situation. Democracy itself is never perfect. It's hard work and it's constantly evolving. It's something you have to want. As I remember the speech given by Michael Douglas in the movie The American President, he says you have to want it really, really bad. It's advanced citizenship, making democracy work. And wanting to tear it down was what Steve Bannon, he said it himself in a speech that he gave before CPAC last year, not this year's, but last year. He talked about tearing down the estate, the political estate that is Washington. The problem with that is there are always arguments as to why you want to make changes. I get that. There's always some a little bit of truth, even in the most ridiculous opinions. But there's always a little bit of truth. That's why even ridiculous opinions get a hearing. But Steve Bannon was ultimately dangerous. He's what in Europe, they actually have parties that follow his thinking, but they have a name for him. They actually call themselves anarchists. But we've learned what anarchy has done in the past, and we've learned how painful and difficult it can be. And the best term we have for it here is throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Very few people work in metal-producing industries in the United States. So the upside to steel and aluminum protectionism is going to be very small. There's very little upside to that type of protectionism. And by the way, historic protectionism has never worked well for us in this country. By the same token, while essentially all of us consume products made of steel and aluminum, these raw materials simply aren't a particularly significant share of our overall American economy. What's more, the coming retaliation from America's trade partners is likely to be more political than economic, and it's not going to be helpful. It's not going to be helpful. We'll talk a little bit about what that really means, and as I said, why you need to understand that tariffs matter less than what's going to happen next. Trade war is not healthy, and if in fact our trading partners are key political as well as economic partners around the world, think that we're just a belligerent country now with a belligerent administration, very little is going to get done, and we ultimately will end up losing. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program. We'll continue this, and we'll hear some of the politics and some of the opinions happening that we're getting from overseas already. People who are involved with trade decision-making, trade commissioners from the European Union and elsewhere, they've all got opinions on this. They've already expressed them, and it may be the reason that some people are very, very nervous about this. We'll try to talk about how that affects you and me with our financial decision making. We'll be right back with more Money Talk.
I need a new heating system. Where do I start?
R.I. Pipe Guys.
Our water heater is on the fritz.
R.I. Pipe Guys.
We want to convert from oil to natural gas.
R.I. Pipe Guys.
What about...
R.I. Pipe Guys is the place to start for all your heating, cooling, and plumbing needs. From installing a new heating system or an ice-cold AC unit, R.I. Pipe Guys are your guys and offer superior service and quality. Everybody's got a guy, but R.I. Pipe Guys are the guys. 401-603-4016 or visit ripipeguys.com for details. Details, rebates, and special offers.
You work hard to recruit the best talent for your business. So you know today's candidates want perks they can enjoy every day. Give them the healthy, active office culture they're looking for with Veridesk Standing Desk Solutions. The new Veridesk ProDesk 60 Electric is a commercial-grade electric standing desk that lets you sit or stand with the touch of a button, and it assembles in under 5 minutes. To learn more about the ProDesk 60 Electric, visit veridesk.com/radio. That's varidesk.com/radio.
People make your business work. But how do you find the right talent? ZipRecruiter. One click posts your job to over 100 top job boards. Then, smart matching technology instantly alerts quality candidates about your job. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
To try ZipRecruiter for free, just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Men, are you tired of those daily blue enhancement pills that take days, weeks, or months to work, if they ever work at all? Listen up. Now you can take Red, the new natural male empowerment pill that works on demand. Even your partner will notice the difference the very first time you use it. To prove Red won't disappoint like the others, you're invited to participate in our nationwide I Take Red Partner Reaction Guarantee Trial. We're seeking participants for this nationwide trial, not only to prove it works the very first time you try it. We guarantee your partner will also notice the difference. Forget those slow-acting blue pills and join those who proudly take Red. Over 50,000 pills have already been claimed and supplies are limited. So to ensure your participation in this free nationwide trial, you must call now.
Superior virility on demand. You only need to take Red once to see what all the fuss is about. Call immediately to participate in our free nationwide trial. Call 800-930-7830. 800-930-7830. Be one of thousands to proudly say, I take Red. 800-930-7830.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
I mentioned in the last segment of the Money Talk program that trading commissioners, people who make the big trading decisions outside the United States, are all taking notice, of course, of not only the debate, but all of the drama taking place here. And there is a lot of uncertainty because some people are wondering, you know, is the president's, you know, statements and, you know, the primary bill, the initial bill on potential tariffs, is this some sort of a trading ploy, the first shot of the president, sort of a, you know, trial balloon kind of thing going up. One Trump, Donald Trump, Twitter feed item that came out recently was he said if the EU wants to further increase their already massive tariffs and barriers on U.S. companies doing business there, we will simply apply a tax on their cars, which freely pour into the U.S. They make it impossible for cars and more to sell their big trade imbalance. Well, when you're the most powerful and financially wealthy country in the world, it's not at all unusual for, you know, countries to say, well, you know, you've already got every advantage that any nation could hope for. You know, what are you really, you know, what is the point of all of this type of ongoing discussion? So, you know, it's a big issue. But the trade commissioner coming back, Cecilia Malmström, who's the European Union's trade commissioner, she spoke on Wednesday morning, spoke of new taxes on agricultural products coming out of the United States, including bourbon and cranberries and peanut butter on orange juice. And I think some of it is being targeted to being the primary, a great many products that come from states where there have been primarily strong Republican states, states that supported Trump, states where there are a lot of the citizens come from the president's base. So if they get hurt, if those individuals get hurt in a trade war, Now, the president can try to explain it or excuse it any way he wants, but ultimately people vote with their money, and they're affected by their pocketbooks. But ultimately, the goal here is to put political pressure on President Trump to actually either think twice about what he's doing, or maybe to understand that there is some cost to his, you know, broad-based, you know, swinging the big bat type of psychology or type of decision making, and as you said, he, you know, to recognize that while he cares about steel country, certainly in West Pennsylvania, he also has loyal constituents in states like Kentucky and Florida and Wisconsin, America's number one source of cranberries. I'm sure even up in Massachusetts they care about the cranberry exports. Georgia, which is the land of peanuts, of course. So I imagine that they care about peanut butter and other products of that type that are, in fact, exported outside the United States. At the same time, the Europeans are deliberately trying not to strike at the heart of the global trading system here. Most people on both sides of the Atlantic simply won't notice too many things. They won't notice too much. But the president has threatened to respond with other types of retaliatory tariffs, with a new set of different countermeasures, including some taxes on, like I said, major products that come out of Europe that are very popular in the United States, European automobiles especially. Car tariffs would be a much bigger deal than steel tariffs, certainly would be, and would naturally prompt a new round of retaliation from Europe. We would easily find ourselves in a pretty much uncharted situation of multiple rounds of tit-for-tat tariffs that wind up meaningfully reducing the living standards on both sides of the trade war, and could eat away rather substantially to our gross domestic product, our GDP, here in the United States. You know, the president was taking great pride in the fact that his policies last year, including the tax bill and the promise of the tax bill up front before it was even passed, and then some of the resulting expectations of the tax bill now that it's in law, in projecting out what it could mean to the economy, you could see a great many of the primary benefits of that tax legislation being reduced considerably if we get into a trade war. So the core risk here is that without a disciplined policy process in the White House, or perhaps knowledgeable advisors like Gary Cohn, the president is left to rely on, number one, his own instincts on this subject, which are not always sound. His view, as articulated both on Twitter and in the press conference he had on Tuesday with the Swedish Prime Minister sitting nearby, is that trade wars are good for the United States. In fact, good and easy to win, according to him, because we currently run a trade deficit. That's his psychology. There is a reasonable, though controversial, argument that this kind of logic actually applies when much of the world has fallen into a recession. That's according to Paul Krugman. He made that case back in 2009. But with unemployment generally low here in the United States, a wave of reciprocal tariff increases is simply going to be disruptive and inefficient as policy. The U.S.-based automobile factories that benefit from taxes on imported cars will actually suffer from the impact of taxes on imported steel. Wisconsin's agricultural communities that lose from reduced global sales of products like cranberry and others may actually gain from barriers to imported European cheese. Wisconsin is, well, aren't they the cheese heads when you ever go into Wisconsin? But the net impact of all of this is simply going to be higher prices for domestic American consumers on just about everything, and a slightly higher pace of interest rate increases from the Federal Reserve. The Fed is not going to look at this as favorable policy for our economy. Everybody's concern is always, if the Fed exercises its efforts to raise interest rates, is that in fact going to slow down the economy and maybe even be a precursor to recession? It's happened before. The Fed needs to raise interest rates. They need to get the Fed fund rate up to higher levels so they actually have some arrows in their quiver, is the phrase they use, if in fact the economy were to slow down in the future. They need to have the tools to fight economic slowdown. But you don't want to be adding those arrows to the quiver, in other words, raising interest rates on the Fed fund rate and on other bond fixed income type products. You don't want to be doing that if in fact the effect of that, which slows down the economy a bit, if it's going to be slowing down the economy at a time when outside political fiscal policy, policy coming out of Washington, is going to slow the economy down even more, perhaps even to a level that we can't measure. Because a combination of Fed policy, which is monetary, Washington policy, White House policy, which is fiscal, you add that together, the wrong amount of it at the wrong time, at the wrong pace, for the wrong reasons, and you end up with recession. And by the way, we haven't had a bear market, which is a drop of 20% in the stock market, when we're not in a recessionary environment. They compound each other. They're part of each other. They reflect the environment that slows things down. In a recession is ultimately a slowing economy for a period of at least 2 quarters in a row or 6 months or longer. The recession that we had in 2007 and 2008 was longer than 6 months. Now, no president takes office familiar with all the issues that they have to deal with. That's not going to happen that way. I get it. The president won because he's a marketing expert. He's a sales expert. And he sold himself. That's what politicians are doing in a campaign. You're selling yourself to the public. And he did it well. You got to give him credit for that. The point of building a competent team, though, in a coherent process, is to actually help the chief executive, the president, deal with those problems that he does not personally have expertise in. Now, he could claim that he has those expertise, but history shows that most presidents don't always have them. So they depend upon the staff that they surround themselves with, the advisors that they surround themselves with, and those advisors have to have the courage and the ability to talk to the president and tell the truth. The term is to speak truth to power. The difficulty America now finds itself in is that while the president, his understanding of the trade issue is poor, he doesn't get it. He does seem to realize that, and he has neither a competent team now nor a coherent process to help him navigate the situation. To say that the president doesn't understand trade policy correctly sounds almost redundant, as he doesn't appear to understand any aspect of federal policy and have a clear understanding of politics. A critical difference with trade is that a protectionist viewpoint is something the president has clung to strongly for a great many years, even as much of the rest of his thinking, has evolved. Unlike healthcare and financial regulatory policy, in other words, this is not an arena in which the president is willing to simply defer to congressional Republicans and other allies. And he needs to have allies and advisors who understand this stuff, not Peter Navarro and certainly not Wilbur Ross. Well, okay, so I've gotten political. I hate doing that, but I'm nervous right now. For the first time since this election, I said, well, we can work our way around this. But this is stuff that even gets me a little bit nervous. Hey, in the meantime, tune in tomorrow. It's Friday. Steve Beauvais will be here at 5 p.m. with more Money Talk. Have a good weekend otherwise.
To promote my new flower shop, I had one place print my business cards, another print my brochures, and a third, my signs. Now my roses aren't red, my violets aren't blue, my geraniums look dead, and I don't know what to do.